I'm doing, but y'all really don't.
All right, here we are, and today is September the 26th, 2011, and this is Pete Wilson and Barbara Lee's with me from the Cobell Historical Society, and we're interviewing Wanda Parrish Blair. Did I get that right?
Wanda Phillips Parrish
Blair. Okay.
Yeah, Phillips got to go in there.
In her home in Hackberry, which is close to Frisco.
In Little Elm.
And we want to record an oral history so that we have some of your memories of Cobell. Why don't we start by your telling me about, just say your name and where and when you were born.
My name is Wanda Louise Phillips Blair. I was born in Duke, Oklahoma on July the 14th, 1933. And my father said it was the day that the drought was broken in Oklahoma, hadn't rained in I don't know how long, and he said he heard me cry, and then he heard the train whistle at 3 o'clock, and it began to rain, so I broke the drought in Oklahoma. That's when I was born. Yeah.
And how long did you live in Oklahoma?
We moved to Texas in February of 1937.
Your whole family?
Mm-hmm. The whole family. It was Mama and Daddy and my cousin and me and Daisy. And that was all we had then. And we came in a truck that was rented from a neighbor. Not rented, I guess he just brought us. I don't know how they paid him. But he brought us in a truck and he drove. And my cousin sat in the middle. Mama sat here. She held Daisy, and I stood up between my cousin and the driver. I was standing. I was just a little bitty. So I stood. And in the back of the truck, which was an old open truck, Dad and the cow rode in the back. And Daddy rode with the cow to keep its head down so it wouldn't hit on the old, you know, the railroad tracks, whatever you call them, overpass. And so they were so low that he'd have to hold her head down when they went. And it was cold. It was in February. He said he never got so cold in his life. But that's how we came from Oklahoma. We came to my grandparents' house, which is now the little road from Cobell to Grapevine, the one where Minyards and I don't know what that's called, Cobell Road possibly, whatever.
Bethel Road.
Bethel?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They lived there next to Joe and Blanche Thweet lived there, and Grandpa and Grandma rented a house, I don't know, from them or somebody, and we moved in with them because Grandma was real sick, and we came down to be with them, and we lived there for a year or so, and then we found another house. Way over sort of on Esther's Road back in there. I don't remember how it all goes now, but C.L. Plumley and them lived on, and it took off from C.L.'s and went down through the country to the south. Well, anyway, we lived there for a while. And
now this first place you lived, let's, Barbara, help us. Where was that?
Well, Joe and Blanche, where I knew them to live, was on Bethel Road.
Yeah.
Up close, not too far from 121.
121.
They lived over on the north side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They lived there, and then Grandma and Grandpa's place was right. There's a little creek, seemed like, down between them, and then Grandma and Grandpa's place was there. And I don't remember any of the other neighbors, but Seal and Iska lived on up the road, going up from us. In a great big old house that they moved to Cobell and hit the high lines and burned.
Right.
Well, anyway, they lived up there. They were neighbors. And
so you moved from Bethel Road to somewhere on Esther.
Yeah, over in that area.
And then what?
And then we moved to an old house over across 114 to the south of 114, and this would have been after 1939, because I was already in school. And we moved over there, and I remember the man that owned it was Bob Morrow from Grapevine. He was great, big fat man. He owned everything in the territory. But anyway, that was his farm, and we moved over there and had this fantastic house that had a, had a front room and a front bedroom, and I guess another room back here was the dining room and the kitchen and a porch. No bathroom. We never had bathrooms. Bathrooms were outside. But anyway, it, between the, these two rooms up here was a long hall. And to get into that hall from the main parlor room, it had sliding wooden doors, big old heavy sliding doors. And we'd get out in the hall and we'd put on plays. And I think that's you doing all your plays. But we'd pull those doors open and shut, you know, and put on plays for Mom and Daddy. And their room, of course, their bed was in the living room. It always was until we finally moved to Coppell and got up in the big time, you know, and they got the bed out of the living room. But anyway, we lived over there, and it's now under one of the runways at DFW.
So would this have been anywhere in the neighborhood of Gentry?
Who's that on the present?
I'm further south than Gentry Road.
Yeah, we were.
Esther's Road.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but now this road was different. This road came down right in behind the old WFAA radio tower.
Yeah.
Yeah, right in there. You went south on that old road, and we were back in there. And I started to Coppell School in 1942.
Before you talk about your school, when you moved into Coppell, where was that house?
Okay. We moved to Coppell in the house, one house north of Pleas and Clara Carbon. First off, we came to Coppell to go to church in 1941. We had neighbors, the Whitesides, that lived up on the hill. And I kept badgering everybody. I wanted to go with them, you know, to go to Sunday school and go to church. And we didn't go. And so Daddy finally said I could go with them. And I was so excited. And he came in on that Saturday. And I heard him tell Mama that I couldn't go, that I wasn't going to go with them Sunday. Well, I didn't wait for him to finish talking. So I just ran out crying and got under my cedar tree and bawled. But anyway, that's when Daddy made the statement to everybody that I wasn't going with the Whitesides, that if any of his kids went to church, he'd take them. So he never missed a service after that, and neither did we. But we had to go every time the door opened. But that's when we started going to Coppell Baptist Church.
So the Pleas Carbon House was on the, was that the one on the east side of the road, or was that the library house?
No, it was over on the east side.
The library house is Elsie Parr.
Across the street.
Yeah, across the street. And Daddy did some work. After he started coming to church, he met Pleas.
And you went to the Coppell Baptist Church.
Yeah, Coppell Baptist Church. And let's see, we had a preacher. Oh, I can still see him. He was a cute little dude. Had black hair, a little bitty guy. And he left and went to the Army. So after he left and went to the Army, well, we got Brother Hand. And Brother Hand didn't go to the Army. Brother Hand stayed. So he was there a long time. But anyway, let's see, where was I? Going to school. Going to church.
In the house.
Yeah. And the house belonged to the Smiths. I can't remember. It seemed like his name was, it wasn't Emmett Smith. He's a football player. It must have been Ernest. But anyway, they moved to Fort Worth. And they were very good friends of Mr. and Miss Corbin. So the house was for sale. So she told Daddy about it, and she told them that Daddy was real honest, you know, and good and all that good stuff, and that he would be good to buy their place. So it rocked around, and Daddy, we got it. And he bought the house and 10 acres for $900 in 1942. And $900. And it was horrible. Oh, I knew. I just cried when I saw that place, you know, because I loved our place in the country. It was covered with cedar trees and all that good stuff, you know. We got over there. There was that old house. It looked like it's fixing to fall down, and it was painted with an old red-looking color about like that. Looked like they got it from a train station or something, you know, and swiped red paint on the house. And brush was grown up. It had big windows around it, and the brush was grown up as high as the wall. It was pitiful looking. But anyway, it didn't take long. Daddy had painted it and was remodeling it and fixing it, and Mama started chopping weeds, and then it was, but it was rough looking, you know, when we first, and we moved there, and I know Mother told us, she said, now you children are going to have to be quiet. She said, now y'all have been yelling and hollering out in the country. She said, when you move to town, you're going to have to be quiet. Well, we all were sleeping the next morning, you know, and I don't know how much y'all know or ever heard about Mr. and Miss Corbin and their habits, but anyway, we were asleep, and our bedroom was on the south, on the front, and the Corbin's garden was right out here, in next to us, to the south of my window. And we woke up, you know, and there was Mr. and Miss Corbin out in the garden fussing. Oh, they fussed all the time, and she could call him some of the weirdest names. But they were dear, you know, they were both just as sweet as they could be, but they, oh, if they couldn't have fought with each other, it was terrible. But anyway, that was our first morning, and then when she decided that she got ready to talk to her mother, you know, their house was here, and then what was Belle and Joe and Miss Thompson and Mary Joyce and all of them, they lived down here. That was Miss Nix back then. That was Miss Corbin's mother, lived down here. So Miss Clara would get out here in the yard and she'd holler, Mama! Just as loud as she could holler, you know, and she'd holler down here for Miss Nix. And Miss Nix would holler back at her. So this was a usual thing. We thought it was real funny, so we didn't have to be quiet.
Somebody else told me that story, maybe Clayda.
Well, I'm sure Miss Harville could have heard it from where she was too, but but they lived there, and Mr. and Miss Parr lived across the road, and there wasn't too many other people. Let's see, Miss Cribbs and Althea lived on down to the north, and the Tom Moores lived down there, and then Bobby June Grace and her family. She was my best friend. And she lived way down there on the end, past, what's the road for?
Ruby.
K Street.
Ruby
K. Yeah, and Ruby both. It was down in there, way on down in there is where Bobby June lived. So I think the Grace House is still there. Okay. It was last time I was at Coppell. But she lived down there, and so we'd have to walk back and forth and visit. Yeah, those were good days. To get back to where the house was, the house was the one that became the nursery. The guy put in a nursery after Dad sold the place. We all married, and David's house was next to Daddy's. He gave us each a lot. And my cousin, Madalou, had a lot down here. She and Uncle Dave had the first one. And then Bird and I had the second one, and Daisy never used hers, so there was always an empty lot between us and David, and then David's lot, and then Janet's lot. Janet was next to Daddy and Mother, I'll take that back, and Janet's lot was the last one. So Daddy built Uncle David in a house, he built us a house, he built David's house, and he built Janet's house. So we all had our houses right there and together.
Now, how long did you stay in that house?
Well, Daddy stayed there till, let's see, I can't even remember when Dad sold out. And when he sold out there, let's see, he got married the second time, and that didn't last. And he came back to his house. And Davy and Faye lived there for a while. Then Dad came back. I'm trying to remember all this. I don't really remember when Dad sold his place. But the place that he bought for $900, he'd given all the land to each of us. And then he had, I believe, 5 acres left. And he sold his old house and the land he had left in whatever year it was for $38,000 that he had paid $900 for. So it's been, you know, it was back in the 70s, I guess, 80, I don't remember just when. course, he went into assisted living in a nursing home.
Now, Wanda, tell us, before we go any further, tell us your parents' names.
Okay. My father was Pleasant Anthony Phillips, and he was known as P.A. all his life, P.A. Phillips. And my mother was Bessie Marie Milliken, and she was born in Smithfield, right outside of Fort Worth. And Daddy was born in Bristol, down close to Palmer, down around Waxahachie, back in there.
And what about, what do you remember of your grandparents' names? Say, okay. Say your grandparents on your mother's side.
My grandparents on my mother's side were Luther Howard Milliken and Daisy Delilah Bell. He was from Mississippi. She was from Arkansas. And on my dad's side, it was Pleasant Bolin Phillips, and he was born in Fincastle, Texas. And my grandmother was Claudie Lewis Phillips, and she was born in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And that's all right.
Now, so you married what year?
I got married to fever, sound like June Carter. I got married in 1951. To Mr. Howard Elsie Parrish, alias Bert. And we got married in January of 1951. We finished high school in June of 1950. And we were both working. We had a job, you know. And first week we got married, we were so excited. We poured out all of our money on the table, both of us together. And we had a whopping $75. And that was pretty good. Pretty
now,
good.
How did you meet Bert? In school?
Yes. We were sitting in school. Like I told you, I came to Coppell in 1942. And I was in the fifth grade. I detested Coppell School. I came from the big school on Grapevine. And it was so much bigger and had more things, you know, when I got to Coppell. It wasn't a two-room outfit like we came in down here. And so I got to Coppell, and there was the fifth grade and the sixth grade and the seventh grade and the eighth grade in one room. So we were all divided, you know. And anyway, we were going pretty good that morning, as I recollect, and this kid came in late. And so they didn't make too much to do about him being late. You know, he came in, he was on crutches. So that was the first time I ever saw him. And he was always getting in trouble doing something, you know. If there's any meanness, he was in on it. And he only came to school during springtime, baseball, you know. Rest of the time, he didn't show up too much. Well, I got to the sixth grade. He was still in the seventh grade. I got to the eighth grade, and he had moved up somehow. He was in the eighth grade. And so Miss Watkins, the supervisor, came out, and she informed the teachers that all these boys, there were about five of them, and they were getting on up, you know, men. And she said, these boys are going to go to high school next year. She says, they're going to get promoted out of here, they're going to high school. She said, you teach them so-and-so, and if they do this, we'll send them to high school. So they took Bert and Joshua and I don't remember how many others were in this group, and they took them down to the first grade classrooms, or the room where they had first, second, whatever, where they had the weekly readers. And they set them down there and took them back down to this room and made them go through the classes with the little kids and learn how to do whatever it was that she said they were lacking in. And lo and behold, they all went to high school. But Bert was about. Bert was the only one out of the group that did that, that finished high school. The rest of them quit. Most of them quit.
He went to Carrollton?
Yes, we went to Carrollton High School, and that was the official name of it then. It was Carrollton High School. And we went, and in our senior year, it became an accredited high school. It wasn't even a Texas accredited high school till then. And we washed and scrubbed and shined, and we got to be an accredited high school. It took Coppell, Carrollton, Addison, Hebron, Field City, Leetot, Hebron, have I left any, but Trinity Mills, all these communities to get enough kids to have a high school. So that's the kind of high school I went to. Anyway, there were 24 in our graduating class.
Now, what year did you graduate?
50.
And was Bert in that class?
Yes, he just came right on through because we had an English teacher. You know Miss Ogle.
Yeah.
Oh, y'all know Miss Ogle. Well, bless her heart, I dearly love Miss Ogle. So we got to English, you know. And so anyway, she called me in one day and she said, I hear you kind of like this old parish boy. I said, well, yeah, I guess I do. And she said, well, I'll tell you what, he's not going to graduate. He's not even going to come close if he doesn't get some help, you know. And she said, they're only to let him go, you know, to give him good grades. This was in our sophomore, maybe junior, way on back there, because of baseball, you know. He has to make good grades to play baseball. And I said, so? And she said, I'm going to give him some workbooks. And she said, you're the best grammar student that I'm going to give these workbooks. And said, you help him with these workbooks and so he could do his grammar. So anyway, we did. That makes a good date, you know, doing English grammar. But anyway, we had a lot of fun doing that. I love grammar. But yeah, it was a long, long 4 years. But the main reason he went and the main reason he finished was because of Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis was the principal. R.L. Turner was our superintendent. And I mean, they had a crummy little corner, you know, for an office. And I worked in Mr. Davis's office for a while, and then I worked in Mr. Turner's office some, filling in, you know, at certain periods. And, but anyway, Mr. Davis was the baseball coach, the first ones when we first got started. So he was the first baseball coach, and that's why Dale is named Dale, my Dale. And he's named after Dale B. Davis in Carrollton. And but anyway, he took a very special interest in Bert, and he was still, let's see, he wasn't on crutches when we started high school. He'd already got off the crutches, but he was still on his big shoe that he had to walk on, and he was.
Now what was his problem?
Okay.
With walking.
When he was about 10, I guess. Or 11. He and Kenneth Woods and a bunch of the boys were down in the park. They loved to play in the park, and they played Tarzan. And the only thing, Kenneth and the rest of them, Kenneth was the best Tarzan in the world. He could yell and holler, and he could jump, you know, from trees, you know, and he had a great time. Well, Bert was afraid of heights, and so he never went that far. But he was up on one of those ledges, those rock ledge things. And somehow he jumped down off of that ledge, and when he landed, he said he hurt his leg. You know, it hurt real bad. Well, there wasn't anything showing. There wasn't any blood there, nothing scraped or anything, so nothing was ever done. So I don't know how long it went till he just got to where it was hurting so bad he couldn't walk, you know. And first thing they did, the doctors assumed it was polio. So they started, it was back in that time, you know, they assumed that he had polio. So they were treating him with the hot towels and the baths and everything like that. And then Mr. Coates lived next door to the parishes. And Mr. Coates was a mason and a Shriner, so he got them in. Thank God for the Shriners. And he got them in, the one in Dallas. Scottish Rite. So he went into Scottish Rite Hospital. And he was there off and on for, and that's one of the reasons, see, that he was so far behind in school. He had missed, and he was in the hospital in and out. So the part of the leg, one leg, was so much shorter. This hip bone had decayed in there during that time, that injury. And so anyway, they did whatever they had to do to him. And then before he left, somebody came up with the idea of putting that shoe on him to pull one leg down where they'd be even, sort of. Or he could walk anyway. So it started out, he carried it with that big old heavy wooden thing built on it. And then his leg would grow or pull out, they would shorten the wood that was on the shoe. It was weird, but he wore, I still have the shoe up in a closet shelf. And
is that the one that Jean Murph has a picture of?
That who?
Must be that Jean Murph, the newspaper publisher in Coppell.
Oh, I'm sure she does. I gave him when I wrote the story.
She has a picture of it, and we have it in our
collection. Yeah, the kid from Coppell. Yeah. Yeah, it was in that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's his little shoe that he walked on. But when we graduated from high school, I put in my book that he walked across the stage in his first suit and a pair of normal shoes. You know, he didn't have to have his any help or anything, but he limped all his life. He limped. People would say, oh, what's the matter? He got arthritis or something. But from that shoe down to when we married, when he would buy a pair of slacks, I'd have to always have to hem one leg up, you know. But it never was over that much. I just was amazed at how that had changed, you know, in that length of time. But it did.
Now, tell me again the year you graduated from high school.
1950.
How does that compare to you and Richard?
Okay, see, when she was a senior,
mm-hmm.
I was a freshman.
Okay, so you graduated three or four years later.
53.
And then Daisy started the high school the next year after I got out. She started high school.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Coppell. We've had a lot of people cop out Coppell School that you didn't like much.
I learned to love it, but I didn't like it then.
You were in the fifth grade,
mm-hmm.
when you came to Coppell School, and of course, it was in old downtown Coppell, the white building next to the bank. No, no, no.
No, it's a brick building.
Oh, you were in, of course.
I was in the one that,
oh, yeah,
that
of course.
Burned.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in the one that burned.
I was thinking too far back.
I got back that far.
yeah, that's right. Okay.
Oh, the reason I didn't like it, I guess it was strange being all of us in there, different ages. But I didn't have a good relationship with Miss Fuller. The Fullers were there, and
Mr. Fuller was the principal,
mm-hmm.
and she was a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or something.
You said classes were together in one room, but there were a number of rooms in that building.
Yeah, there was the little bitty kids were down on this end.
On the east end, probably.
Yeah. And the one room was back in there, and the little kids were here. And then it seems like there was a room here, maybe had the 3 and 4 grades, 1 and 2 were together, and 3 and 4 might have been together, and I don't know, 5, I guess the reason, because there weren't as many of us up here as they were back down here. And then on the other end were some other rooms of some sort. I know Mr. and Miss Husband lived in the back corner back in there, and there was a big auditorium in behind, across the hall. Behind these rooms, there was the auditorium. I say big. It probably wasn't big as my house now, but thinking back on it. But, they were just those classes like that. But it was weird being all together.
And the lunchroom was inside that building.
Yes. Yes.
What about
in the corner? Later, later they did build a bigger lunchroom, I think, out in here. But the lunchroom was back in when I first started was in the corner, one room of the it's little, but it was inside the.
That probably would have been in the north, east.
Yeah, northeast.
Oh, it was my second grade room.
Yeah, well, that was a lunchroom. And I remember that's the room where they held my nose and poured the grapefruit juice down me. And that's when we I didn't like the school. But after, and one thing, too, I had gone to church at Coppell since 41. But I was going to school in Grapevine. So I didn't, I'd see these kids, but they didn't know me. I was, I never was part of the group. So when I got there, and I still didn't feel like part of anything for a while. But I learned.
Can you rattle off the names of your teachers that you had at Coppell?
Well, let's see. I know that I had... there was a little lady named Miss Funk, F-U-N-K, little bitty lady. I had Miss Copeland. I dearly adored Miss Copeland.
Yes.
She was a long, tall drink of water with hair
golden
that she braided
hair.
Her. And when she talked, I'd say, what did she do? She'd talk, she'd get so excited, she'd so, you'd spittle would run out the car. She's a really pretty lady, but that was so strange, But she was nice. And I had Mr. Hill was there, of course, when I was in my last year in school there, it was Mr. Hill. Brother Hand taught us a while. Let's see, I never did have the Hudspeths. And I guess that's about it.
Yeah. What about school activities? Like games or parties?
School activities. We didn't have too many school activities. You're doing good, Papa. Stay inside that walker. We didn't have anything like organized sports or anything, but we always played at recesses and stuff like that. And sometimes in the spring, we'd go other places and play softball. But I know one time we had 4-H club. First time I ever went to Dallas, we went with it was 4-H club. Miss Leslie took us. Patsy Faye's mother took us in the pickup truck. We were in the pickup truck. Went to Dallas. Cold. She set up in the cab. Rest of us sat in the back. Of course, we would be breaking the law now. So it was fun. We had more fun that day. We rode in the back of that pickup truck right through downtown Dallas and looking at everything, like a bunch of hicks. And I can remember the flying red horse and seeing it for the first time. I had seen it sitting on the porch where we lived over there for the DFW.
Yeah.
You could sit on the porch. And we'd sit there during the war and watch the blackouts, and Dallas would go dark, Fort Worth would go dark. You could just see there was nothing to block anywhere. You could just see lights from everywhere. And anyway, I can remember thinking, seeing that thing off down there in Dallas, and I wanted to go see what all that was. And so I got to see Dallas. And then I went to work there in 1950, and I saw plenty of Dallas for 40 years after that. But we lived over there in 41, and Daisy's birthday came on the 17th. Well, Pearl Harbor was on the 7th, and in between the 7th and the 17th, they had already come across the countryside and put in electricity. They brought it. They were bringing it in from Dallas to Fort Worth, right across where the airport is now. And any farm that was in the area close enough could tie on to the electric lines.
And this was when again?
41.
In 41.
41. We didn't have electricity till 41. And anyway, Mr. Mara put the electricity in, so we had electricity in the house. And when I mean electricity, I mean there was a light that hung down from a 9-foot ceiling on a string, you know, one of those old things that the flies sat on, and a light bulb. And that was the light. And each room had one of those things hanging down, and maybe one plug to a room. But that was our electricity. And we still didn't have a bathroom. So anyway, we got a bathroom finally. We moved to Coppell, and Daddy put in a bathroom at Coppell.
Now, is it your perception that that maybe Coppell already had electricity? It was just because you were a farm, you didn't have it yet?
I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was.
Tell us about the 4-H trip again.
Oh,
well, what were you doing with 4-H?
Yeah. It was exciting. We learned to sew, and we learned to cook, and we learned all those things. You know, it was fun. And we'd have contests, and we'd make clothes, and they'd judge them, you know, at different things. And what was it? Head, heart, hands, and health. That's the 4-H that we were in the 4-H club. And the boys had 4-H, the girls had 4-H.
And you had sponsors?
Yeah, and they would come out like once a month or however they came, you know, and we'd have, most people got in so they could have time off from class. So if you were in 4-H, you got to go do whatever was in 4-H club. And, but it was fun. They taught
me. Now, you were going to Dallas. What did you do besides drive through Dallas and see the sights? Did you do something else with 4-H?
Well, we were going to, I don't know what you'd call it, a rally or judging. That's for, like with our little 4-H club, whoever made the best of a dress or a coat. We had people that made just their whole outfits, and would be entered in contests. And then whichever one from a certain school, you know, they would be entered. So we were going to something like that. It was a area.
Was it down around Fair Park?
I couldn't tell you where it was. I had no idea. All I know is Dallas. And there, I don't know where it was.
Do you remember seeing anything else besides downtown?
I don't remember a thing except downtown and the Flying Red Horse. And but I don't remember what year that was even. It must have been about 44, 43. But the most exciting thing during that period to me was going down to the railroad tracks and watching the troop trains go through.
In Coppell.
In Coppell. They would turn class out if we could heard the train coming, because it took a long time for them to go through. But if we were out at recess or something, everybody, teachers and all, we all ran down to the railroad track, and we all stayed there and waved and hollered and yelled and carried on with them till the troop trains got through.
And were the troop trains going one direction, or were they
most of the time, the ones I can remember, they were going east. They were going east from there.
The Fort Worth area toward Dallas. And
I don't know where they were going or where they were headed, but yeah.
Talk about your church experiences. You started the church at Coppell Baptist even before you started school there.
Yes, I started there in 41,
and that building would be the one that's still there.
No.
Tell us about it.
My papa tore the one down that was there. They went in one day, and the old building was an old brown, ugly building. You know, they sang about the little brown church in the Wildwood. Well, that one wasn't even brown. It was just grody looking. It didn't have a speck of paint on it. Probably hadn't had it in 100 years. I don't know. But it was an ugly building. It was just a building, you know, just thrown up there.
No, I don't think we have a picture of that.
I
remember the Methodist, but I don't remember.
I've got a picture of Daddy standing up on it. But anyway, the day they tore it down, they got everything out, and then Dad climbed up on top and tied a rope to the top of it. And climbed down, and it was tied to a pickup truck, and they pulled, and it fell. And so they pulled it down, and then he and some of the workmen from church, people that volunteered and helped him, but Daddy was the carpenter that built the white building that's there now. Mm-hmm. And
I'd always heard that. P.A.
Phillips. P.A. Phillips. You betcha. And it's still there. Yeah. It'll probably be there when the Lord comes back to someone to tear it down.
So now, the new building, the one that's there now, was built in what year?
I couldn't attest to that, Aunt Barbara.
40.
Oh, you mean the white one?
Yeah.
47.
Okay.
47, yeah, 40. That one. You call it the new 40. Building. I was thinking about the one they got now.
No,
about 47 was when... the one that's there now, the white one.
So tell us about the old building. Barbara knows a lot, too, about the church, but tell us about the old building.
The old brown one?
Yeah.
Well,
it had like how many rooms or whatever.
Oh, it had one. It had
one. One big auditorium.
It had, it just had one big old room, and it had wires strung through it that curtains went on, and you might have six or seven or eight Sunday school classes going at the same time. You could listen to anybody you wanted to. Just pick it out and listen. But, and I can remember the plays we used to have. And one time I was something in a play and we were late getting there. Daddy didn't get in from work. So to get there, we went around, I went around to the back and I climbed in through, couldn't get in the door, climbed in through a window somewhere back in there. We had it divided, you know, the stage was back there. So I climbed in and got there in time to give my part in my play. But it was great. It was great. I remember the main thing I remember about Coffeehill Church was Miss Lena. Miss Lena Carbon was the piano player. And I watched every move Miss Lena made, you know, and I just, everywhere we'd go where there was a piano, I was playing, trying to. So Daddy got me a piano one time. He bought it from this guy that he worked with. And they went down to get it. This man was a part-time carpenter and a part-time preacher, but he was a big-time crook in my book. So anyway, he bought the piano, and when he went down to pick it up, the guy had already sold it to somebody else. He offered more money, so he let them have it. So there was without a piano again. So I was about 11 or 12 then. So again, Mr. Coates comes to the rescue. Miss Coates wanted to get rid of her piano. She didn't play it anymore, so Daddy bought my piano, the one that is at Lisa's house now. Janet's daughter has the piano that Daddy bought us. And he paid $35 for it, I think. Beautiful, big old upright like this one. And paid $35 for it. And he made a deal with Miss Lena. Her old house, if you remember it, do you remember Miss Lena's house with the gingerbread trim around the bottom? And don't even look at you. I know you don't remember it. And anyway, the gingerbread trim went all the way around. It's a big house.
Where was this?
Minyard's. Minyard's little house is sitting on where Miss Lena used to live, right there.
I think we have a picture of that, I think.
I think we do.
Big front porch.
Yeah. And so he made a deal with her that he would remodel her house and take out all that old gingerbread stuff and fix it. And he did all that work and remodeled her house. And in exchange, I took 6 months of piano lessons. That's all I ever had in my life, was 6 months. And I'd go up on Saturday morning. I'd walk from our house over here on Bethel Road or whatever it was called. I'd walk all the way down to the corner up to Miss Lena's up here. And we'd play till she had to quit and cook lunch. Sometimes I'd help her clean up her kitchen, do the dishes, and then we'd have piano lessons, and then I'd come home.
Wanda, let's stop right here. Now, for Pete, she talked about the white sides. They lived way back there by the Whitesides?
Yeah.
Okay, now, Miss Whiteside, Miss Lena, and Miss Elsie Tarr were all sisters.
And Miss Gentry, and Miss Plumley.
Well, yeah, there were others, but see, those three
the Harrisons
affected her life.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
All
sisters. You just name them, and of course, Miss Plumley, I dearly loved her, Mr. Plumley. But anyway, the music part was so... She first rattled out of the box the first week I went up there, you know. Mother had bought me some music, and you'd ordered from the Montgomery Ward catalog, and I think it cost maybe like 50 cents a sheet, you know. And I don't mean a sheet then. You've got 4 and 5 pages of this music. So Mother's favorite song was the Blue Danube. So she wanted me to learn the Blue Danube. So anyway, I took it with me. And she said, all right. She showed me the stuff, you know. And Miss Clara, I skipped that part. Before I went to Miss Lena's, Miss Clara one day set me down with a Cokesbury hymnal and marked in the letters the notes to Silent Night. Well, that afternoon when Daddy came in from work, Mother took him out. She said, listen. She said, my words, and Miss Corbin's playing. Said, I never heard her play. She had the most gorgeous piano in that house. She never touched it. And he said, Miss Corbin's playing? She said, no. She said, that's not Miss Corbin, that's Wanda. So, anyway, Daddy came on over, you know, and he told me, he says, I'll get you a piano. And he did later. But anyway, Miss Corbin, Miss Clara Corbin, helped me, and I learned. And finally, she said, well, said, I can't teach you anymore. She said, you need to go somewhere else. So that's when Daddy got Miss Lena to help me. So anyway, she said, all right. She said, you take the Blue Danube. And said, you know enough, you know how to do it? I said, I want to see what you can do with it next week. And she said, as you learn one piece each week, I'll give you another one. So that one, and the next week she gave me Under the Double Eagle. So I got a new piece the next week. And from then on, it was just, you know, one piece a week. And it was fun. So much.
And I see you still play.
Oh, you bet. I don't play much anymore. I don't play for church like I did. I play for a little B church out at Old Stoney. When they call and don't have anybody to play, I'll go fill in. But my talents don't meet the new requirements. They have to have professionals, you know. So that's fine. And but I'll tell you one thing, there's still not anybody around that can beat me playing hymns. I don't care who they are. But anyway, that was my music lessons. And then I couldn't play at church. I was 12 then. And like I said, there wasn't any of them could beat me playing, but I was a kid, so I couldn't play. I was a kid, so I could play on maybe Sunday night, or I could play for Sunday school or something, but I was too young to be the church pianist. So it rocked on, and finally, they ended up, Charlotte moved off to Grapevine and moved her membership and left. So they came to me, you know, so there I was, an old married lady. I was 17. So I could play at church then. So I became the church pianist when I was 17. And I played until we moved up here in 60, to Louisville. Bert and I moved up there in 69 or 70 and moved our letter to Lakeland Baptist. And I played there for second service for 2 or 3 years. And then a new lady came, and she was in the choir, and I was playing the piano, and I heard her play one time. I said, hey, I got an idea. I said, why don't you play and let me sing in the choir? I said, I don't know if y'all got to sing in the choir much. But, oh, she could. And she's still, I think, the pianist at Lakeland Baptist Church in Louisville. But she was something else. And I'm a hymn player, and she was a pianist. But it's been fun.
Tell us, we've interviewed a lot of people, of course, who live in Coppell, some of them downtown, close to down, what we call downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what you remember of the town, the stores, the post office, or anything like that.
When we first came to Coppell, and the first time I remember going to Coppell, we would go down to the park on Sunday afternoons to the ball games. Tremendous fun. And there was, you know, games from different towns and different groups, and they had a grandstand, little grandstand built in there. It was a beautiful park. Come in over there by the stone gates and go in. And I can remember my grandfather and the uncles and all would go down for the ball games. And the main street of Coppell, the post office set over here, and the main street going south had a drugstore, an old drugstore building, and a movie store, a movie place, an old movie place, and the gin, the big cotton gin was over here in the corner. But these buildings just fascinated me because they were empty. And people would tell us, you know, that, of course, that was during the Depression. These buildings were still pretty good-looking buildings, had concrete steps in front, you know, going up into the buildings. And there were two or three empty ones on the north side. And I know they turned one of them into a washateria.
Okay, now, let's see. You're talking about the road that goes east and west through Coppell. What, Bethel Road?
East and west. Yeah, and on the north side of that was where the washateria. And then there was, finally, we had a grocery store here. And that was the only grocery store, this one, on the north side, was the only grocery store in Coppell at the time. And then later, in the 50s, I guess it was, the Englishes came to town. The Englishes, they were the kinfolks of Brother Han, and they built on this side. And I had a lady tell me one time that I shouldn't go over here because all the Baptists were supposed to buy at this grocery store.
That was on the south side.
Yes, that was the truth. I was told I was supposed to go over here.
Did you do it?
No. I said, well, I went to both of them. I went to wherever I wanted to. And I said, I've always gone over here, and I've always done my business over there, and I'll continue to do some.
Who operated that store?
Over here?
North.
Let me see now. Lonnie McDowell had it. Lonnie McCord. Lonnie McCord was there, way back there. And all the Gentrys. The Gentrys operated the grocery store in Coppell, didn't they?
Were they on this side?
No, Clyde Gentry. No, Clyde Parker ran the North store for a while, but that was later.
Well, and the post office. There were different ones over here. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the Gentrys. Yeah, he did help in that grocery store. Because when we first came down here, the kids, Charlotte and Nell and Ellsworth, Lord, I tried to think of his name, but I didn't, couldn't think of it for an Ellsworth. And they would come and get Grandpa and take him down to get his groceries. They liked Grandpa, and he was always shooting the bull with them, you know, and he was a fine fella. He really was a nice Grandpa Milligan. And so they'd come get him, and he'd go down and get whatever groceries they needed because no one had a car back then. And then on Sunday night, I don't know why, but some of that younger group came and got Grandpa to go to church at the Methodist church. Now, I don't know which group it was, but anyway, Mom and Daddy let me go with him. And oh, that was the biggest thrill of my life. I just loved it. I would go in there, you know, and sing that little old B Methodist church, and that's the first place I ever heard Church in the Wildwood, and I love it to this day. I've got articles I've written and stories and histories, but Church in the Wildwood out of the Cokesbury Hymnal.
Well, but see, like, we didn't have a service every Sunday.
No.
So we'd all go to the Baptist when there was a service there. Then if it was a service then the next week over at the Methodist, we'd all go over there.
Yeah, but this is at night. We'd go down there at night. They'd have these singing deals. And it was just wonderful. And I can still remember that. But I know the old Cokesbury that they used there at that church had the picture of the circuit rider on the front. Down in the corner it had a little squiggle, and the old circuit rider on his horse was in black, and it was down in the corner. And then the later Cokesbury's came out, and it had the church with the steeple on it down in that little thing in the corner. And I've only seen one or two like that old Cokesbury was when I went there. But that was my first experience at a Methodist church when I was going there. But it was fun. Yeah, Ellsworth and George and Newton and it was one more. They all ran together.
Benny Horn.
It might have been of him and the Parker guy. He was younger than them, but they had a truck, and didn't have it. Was just it was a motor and a frame and a long bed on the back, and that's what this bunch ran around in, you know. And
Ronnie Parker described that.
And they rode on this truck. I can remember that when we first, because you know, 1941, I wasn't but eight. But
do you remember a bank building?
Oh, you betcha.
Tell me about what you remember.
Well, all I
where was it?
The bank building that I remember was on the east. It's on the east side. Let's see. Now the Cosby's place. The Cosby's lived on this side. And there was a building at one time that had steps and stuff. I can just remember the steps and the buildings because I thought they were so big. I'd never seen anything like that before until we came to Coppell. We never saw any buildings like that. And they were just little huts, but they looked big to me then. But they were empty. But it was empty too. There wasn't any banking. There wasn't anything but the grocery store and the barber shop that I remember.
And where was the barbershop? On the corner?
Right where it's always been.
Always been.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lucky's place was on the corner.
All right, we're continuing our interview with Rhonda. Rhonda, before we get to anything else, tell us, you started to mention the drugstore on Coppell Road that went south. The drugstore, you remember, was it in operation in 42? 41?
Mm-hmm.
What about, and that was Miss Minnie McGee's drugstore. What other buildings beside that drugstore do you remember? You said
there
was a movie theater.
Well, that's what they told me, that one of those buildings that was empty, there was a movie theater. See, none of these things were in existence when we came. Everything had already closed and was gone. The buildings over there where the washateria later was, and the grocery store, and on down toward Bucky's, there were all sorts of little buildings in through there when we first came. But I don't remember. I don't remember too much about them.
This building that you thought was a movie theater, was it south or north of on the same side of the street as the drugstore?
There was some more buildings there. Let's see, y'all lived in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And the gin was like back this way.
You're talking about the gin on South
Cotton Gin.
There were two of them, but you're talking about the one that was kind of...
Was there one there still when you were little?
Yeah, a little. You're talking about the one that was on the east side of the road, almost to where you went into the park.
It wasn't down that far.
Not that far.
It was up closer to where you live.
Yeah, right. Okay, I know where you are now.
The Parkers, the Bud Parkers and the Clyde Parkers and all this sort of stuff lived here. And we had pictures made on our backyard Sunday in 1950, standing in the Parker's yard. And the gin was right here behind us, so it's up in here.
Uh-huh.
The Kirklands were here, and then I don't remember on down this way. Barnicks were, seemed like they would have been out sort of in front of where the gin was back in behind.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember the gin thing.
You said when you married Bert and while your house in Coppell was being built by your father,
mm-hmm.
you moved into a house that's close to the old railroad depot.
Well, let's see, how far is the depot from the
well, it was
road?
In your backyard.
Yeah, the railroad track was in our backyard.
Right.
So I'm trying to remember where the depot sat. It was up here closer to the road, wasn't it? To,
mm-hmm.
Up this way. Well, see, our house was the first little house after you made that curve and coming on like this and coming on into Coppell. And then that little rent house sat right there in the corner.
So that was before Weldon and his built their brick house.
That's before Don and Vanessa even built their house. They built a house. Weldon and them lived across in the corner back this way.
Right.
Their little rent house where they lived when they first married was on the north side of that road. And their house where Weldon and Gemma lived back then was over here in the corner. Their farm was back in here,
mm-hmm.
on that side of the road.
Right.
And then Vanessa and Don lived over here. Venera and Don lived on that side.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any memory at all of what the railroad depot looked like in 40, whatever year that was?
Just
about
the depot.
Just a big building?
Just a depot. They all look just about alike. I know the only thing, the only time we ever went to the depot, if you ordered something, like if you ordered a new linoleum for the kitchen, and when it came in, you had to go down to the depot and get it. And I can remember doing that. And
so the train would drop it off?
Yeah.
And you would go up
yeah.
later?
Yeah, people would go there. Do
you remember, was there somebody there to help you?
Oh, yeah. There were people at the depots. There were people at the ice houses. There were people everywhere you went. There were
who
people
was
that helped
the
you.
Depot?
I don't remember. I don't remember who ran the depot.
What year are we talking about? What year did you move into the little house?
Well, the year that we would have gone to the depot was back like in 40, 42, way back there, 42.
So would it declare the horrible?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
All I know, it changed during the war. It was the something about the, like we're talking about the troop trains and things like that, and it the just the use of whatever was done changed, and it was no longer
mm-hmm.
useful.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember that one. Of course, we always went to the depot at Grapevine, and we went to the ice house at Grapevine because I said we didn't have an ice house. I don't believe at Coppell. I don't remember. They delivered ice. I know Bert helped Mr. Hodge that brought us ice when we lived over by the airport, where the airport is now. They delivered ice to us, and it was from a Coppell route. And Bert worked for him way back there when he was a kid. And, so I guess that's the first time I ever saw Bert, but I didn't know.
Okay, Wanda, something I'm concerned about. You said when you and Bert first got married, this little house you lived in,
mm-hmm.
was it the little white frame house that Don and Venera lived in?
I don't know. Don and Venera built a little white frame
uh-huh.
house.
Is that what you lived in?
I don't think so. What we lived in might classify a chicken coop now. Is little.
Okay, that's what, you know, I think she's talking about Miss Patrick's house.
Little bitty in
little
the corner.
Did it face west?
No. When we lived in it faced south. It had one room and a bedroom and a kitchen back here and let's see, and the bathroom was out back like usual, and the little bedroom, I remember, it, the door to the bedroom was on the north, and our bed set across the room on this wall. One morning we were awakened around the door, they had it stuffed with newspapers.
Oh,
And I mean, it was the whole newspaper about that thick, you know, wadded up in the cracks around the doors. We didn't use that door. It was just there. Well, one morning, the norther hit. And when it hit, it blew all those newspaper bombs out of the door. You know, they came flying out. It blew them across the room. It was awful. We must have had more than a norther, but, oh, it was something. But I remember that little house. It was weird. Yeah, we lived there, I guess February, March or something, in 51, April. And Dale was born in November of 51. And we'd already moved into our new little house.
She's talking about Miss Patrick's house.
Let's just make sure. You said the main door faced south.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you had a door that you didn't use on the north.
Yeah, there's a little bitty porch back there.
Now tell me, that door that you didn't use, if you had gone out that door, would you be facing the railroad tracks?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So it faced south, but it was on the east side of the road. It was right where the curve.
Uh-huh.
And you're right next to the railroad.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't think I've got any pictures made there.
Well, we have a couple of pictures just lately. Should have brought them with us to let you look at them. I bet you'd recognize them. But I can't remember who gave them to us or where we got them. But anyway, we have some. We should have brought them.
Oh,
I don't know if they'd look like the way it did when you were there, but there were people in there.
There's my old copy of pictures.
Now, before we get into the pictures,
okay.
Tell us, we were going to ask her about, what else, Barbara? Anything else at all? We still covered school and church, when they got married, where they live.
When I first went to
the park, anything else in the park, Grapevine Springs. Did you call it Grapevine Springs?
Grapevine Springs, you bet. When I was in school at Grapevine, that was one of our greatest field trips. We always came to Grapevine Springs for, mm-hmm. you know, field trips in the spring and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we always had to see where Sam Houston signed his peace treaty. He signed about $55 million all over the state of Texas. But anyway, we had to come down to see that. And
now, would they say there was a certain tree?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. There was a certain tree we had to see before he signed the peace treaty. But,
Wanda, if we were in that park now, could you go to where that tree was?
Oh, no. I probably couldn't. I hadn't been in the park
in
so long.
The legend is that it was struck by lightning or something. I don't know.
Wanda, do you remember if I said the Connaughton place?
Oh, yes. Old big brick thing down right below the parishes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where the parishes lived. The parishes house, see, and Mr.
Yes. It's rock. But do you remember when that was built, or has that always been there as far as back as you can remember?
No, I'd say that was built. Now, didn't you have an uncle or something that lived down there? Did he live in that house?
Ledbetter's.
Huh?
The Ledbetter's, John Ledbetter's lived there when I was a kid.
When you were a kid?
Yeah. And even in the high school, they lived there.
Well, it seems like it was an uncle of yours.
Well, I had an uncle
that lived there a while, and he worked with Dad, or Dad, some relation.
He didn't live there. An uncle Doug Harlan?
No, that's not what I'm thinking about.
James?
No. Well, anyway, I remember the Connaughtons, and the Ledbetters were there after the Connaughtons.
What do you know about the Connaughtons? We don't know anything about them.
They had two sons, Junior and Charles. That I can remember. They had two boys. It seems like the daddy was a doctor. But
Mr. Dr. Connaughton?
I think so. I'm not sure.
His name? Or his
but Junior and Charles were the two boys. And they were always in trouble. They would steal. I remember they stole everybody's lunch one time. They'd stay out of school. And they'd sneak up there and you do down, the lunches set up on top of the ones that brought their lunches on top of their racks out there, and they would steal them, and the kids would have your lunch. So finally, it was Junior and Charles Connaughton, and that's what sticks in my head about, but they didn't stay too long, because the Ledbetters came along in 50, let's see, John was in my 8th grade class, I know, John Ledbetter, I don't know.
Mary Lou's brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Lewis. And Mary Lou was another one about the music, bless her heart. She came up to my house one day, and she said, Wanda, would you help me? I said, well, yeah, for what? She said, would you help me learn to play hymns? I looked at her like, you know, I thought, well, I said, you don't play hymns, not supposed to, you know, or something like that. I didn't say it, but anyway, I said, well, yeah, why? And of course, she could piano player like I'll never be, and I said, well, why do you need me to help you? She said, I can't play hymns. I don't know how. And she said, I've got to play some hymns, and I need help. So I spent a couple of afternoons helping Mary Lou Ledbetter learn to play hymns. Now, that's something. But
Mary Lou gave me music lessons.
I know it. She was fantastic. I said, well, what do you mean you need my help? And but see, they didn't have, she didn't play hymns in church. And yeah, there's so much difference in playing hymns and playing other things. That's why I'm a good hymn player. And when it comes to playing, they want it all played now like something else. I can't do that. Yeah. And
so Mary Lou was in school at the same time you were?
No.
No?
No, Mary Lou was way out. She wasn't in school. John Lewis was in my grade.
Okay.
So that, I guess he...
She was older.
She was, oh, yeah, she was quite a bit older.
Well, that's right. She was older.
Yeah, she was older.
I wasn't around John Lewis a lot.
Yeah, and I say John Lewis is in my grade. Maybe he was a grade behind. I don't know. I often wondered about John.
He still lives in Fort Worth.
He does.
Mm-hmm. With his father, at least, up until a couple of years ago.
I know one time
Mary passed away, though.
Oh, yeah. I got in trouble, and everybody laughed and giggled at me, you know, and we were having conjunctions. And so the teacher wrote everything across there, you know, and he wrote, and he had the sentence, you know, up there, and he pointed to, and what is this? And of course, I put in my hands. So he said, Wanda, what is and how is it used? I said, and is the conjunction that connects John and I. Well, of course, everybody just twittered and laughed and giggled, and, you know, that was funny to them, you know, John and I. Bless his heart.
Wanda, do you remember anything else down that road around the Carlton House? Anybody live there that you remember?
Oh,
prominently?
Yes, well, prominently to me. Now, going where the Connaughtons lived, the next house up was the Parrish place, I guess. Would have been Parrish's.
This would be going west.
All right, coming this way.
Uh-huh.
And it's no longer there, but it would have been the Parrish house. Now, across the street from the Parrish house, on that side, is just a bunch of brambles and trees and shrub now.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess it's still there that way, unless someone's built in there. But at one time, that's where Burke's family lived, over here. It was an old, run-down shack. And when Miss Parrish's family divided up their property and so forth, she got enough money from her part of over there on Moore Road and where they lived over there. She got enough money, so the story goes, that she bought that little white house over here next to Mr. Coates. Coates lived here, Parrish's lived there, and she bought it. with her money. So that would have been, they lived in this house, I think, when we first came to Cop Hill. So that would have been in the 40s. She bought this house. And they lived there till they had to.
Do you remember Mrs. Cook's name?
Lizzie.
Lizzie's all I ever know.
I didn't know we could remember that. The
yeah, Lizzie.
Mm-hmm. What about the Parkers? Clyde Parker.
Yes, I remember
Postmaster.
Them great. Postmaster, I love Mr. Parker. He was great.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bud Parkers, they were the same. I went to school with Bobby. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. No, when we first came to Coppell, there were 225 people in it. And wasn't much there. But like I was talking about Bobby June, we'd go on Saturday afternoons, we could go to Grapevine. And the Dennises lived up there by Tom Moore and them, the Graces, the Dennises, the Gwines, Mr. and Miss Gwines. He used to drive the school bus for Carrollton. They lived there for a while. But anyway, we could go to town with Mr. and Miss Dennis, and he would take me and Bobby June every Saturday afternoon. We'd go to Grapevine. I would have a quarter, and my quarter got me a hamburger and a Coke and got me in the movie on Saturday afternoon. And Mr. and Miss Dennis would sit out on the street with the rest of the people, and they would talk. And all the parents would gather and talk and giggle and carry on, you know. And this was, they had money to do anything else. But the kids, we could, you know, that was what a quarter got to
do. Now, where did you eat your hamburger in Grapevine?
Oh, man, I can't even remember. It would have been down, it was close to the movie. Now, that's another thing. Daddy built the movie house. It's still there. If things don't fall down, that Papa builds. That movie house, Daddy built for Mr. Kirby Buckner at Grapevine. So this the hamburger joint was somewhere there close to the movie.
It wasn't a drugstore, it was just a hamburger place.
It was a hamburger place, I believe. Because the drugstore, I think, was higher price.
Before we pass on.
The City Drug, oh yes, yeah.
But your father, P.A. Phillips, built the movie house in Grapevine.
Right. And the year that I was six, so that would have been 1939. Anyway, that year for Christmas, I started school that year, and I came home and announced to all my brothers and sisters that there was no Santa Claus, because I learned it in school. Well, anyway, I got in trouble for that, and that year for Christmas, when it came Christmas morning, we always got a doll. And mine was dressed in blue, and Daisy's was dressed in pink every year. I got the blue one, she got the pink one. Well, anyway, that year for Christmas, we walked in, and there sat our dolls in the most beautiful, the sofa was about this long. Little upholstered sofa, and two little chairs, straight chairs with little wooden legs, and they were upholstered to match the sofa. And I think they sat on Daisy's front porch for years, that little set that was on Daisy's front entrance. But anyway, there was this sofa and chairs with this doll, you know, in it that Santa Claus had brought us, you know. And I never did quit believing in Santa Claus after that, because, you know, that Daddy had brought carpet, that beautiful paisley purple and red and blue carpet from the theater, and he had built this sofa and chairs, and Mama had upholstered it with that carpet. All they were the cutest things, and so I believe in Santa Claus to this day.
Now, what happened to those dolls and things?
Well, my dolls, we wore them out, but our dolls never did last, because we played with them. We played, you know.
But the
sofa, Daisy had it for a long time. It was, I know she'd redecorate it and do stuff. She may still have it, but she had it on her front entrance on the porch. some way, but that would have been in the 40s.
You have a picture of that.
Yeah, 1939, somewhere along in there.
Well, one time, unless Barbara can think of something else, I just exhausted every topic that we like to cover with
you. I'm sure everybody's told you, of course, that was a joke, you know, if you're the last one, you turn out the light when you leave. There's 200 of us there. And it was, like Barbara said, we didn't have enough for churches. But one time during the summer, so everybody would get together for the revival meetings under the tabernacle. And I don't know where everybody came from, really. I thought about that so much. And, of course, it seemed back then the tabernacle seemed so large. I don't know for sure how big it was. But like I've written about so many times, one summer we had a revival meeting, and when it was over, of course, we always had cake and ice cream and everything, you know, to close out the revival meeting, and everybody stayed and did all that. But anyway, that particular year, everybody had office time, and the dogs loved to stay in there because it was cool. I'd get in the sand. It just had sand on the ground and everything, well, on the benches, and they'd get in there in the sand. Well, they had fleas. Well, everybody got fleas, and I mean everybody, and itching and scratching and carried on, and I've written articles about, I guess I got the best grade I ever got writing for children and in my class, and when I wrote that story, the woman wrote back, she said, I've laughed so hard reading that, said I could just see it. But everybody was scratching and itching and fleas from the dogs under the tabernacle. That's a good place.
We had those fans, those paper.
Well, the funeral home. Yeah. From the funeral home. Yeah. Everybody had to have a fan. The kids would sleep. The mamas would bring quilts and put the kids out on the ground. You know, it's a wonder any of us ever grew up, I swear. And,
now, this was the tabernacle behind the Baptist church.
Yeah, right? Sorry, out the side of it. Mm-hmm. The church was there, and the tabernacle was here, and the Arnetts lived here, and the Woodses lived here, and it's all gone. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess, it's gone.
Part,